All right, good morning. We are around the desk at Berean, and we are getting ready to do our weekly podcast. And our article this morning is from Desiring God, and it came to us by way of Pastor Jonathan, and it's entitled, Don't Do God's Will Like an Atheist. And Jonathan sent us all an email and had a word in it that I had to look up. He talked about altruism and being altruistic. And so I'll let Jonathan explain how he came across the article and what we're going to be talking about.
Right. So this is our Christmas connection. If you're anything like me, you may have attended some events already with the focus on being on Christmas. And invariably, especially if you attend some non-Christian Christmas parties or some other place, invariably when someone's speaking about Christmas this time of year, you will hear statements like, well, you know, the real meaning of Christmas is all about family, or the real meaning of Christmas is all about giving. And and even in this, one article here that I saw first, because I began to think about that statement, and then I thought to myself, is God altruistic? And is
family... Should we define that?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, okay. And so, in fact, I've got another article that we're not going to read the entire article, but it's got a great introduction to this idea. It's called Altruism Has No Place in Christianity. And so, it is better to give than to receive. How often do we hear that? The motto of the altruist, this would-be proverb, exhorts us to act for others at our expense. So, of course, altruism is a system of thought in which you put, basically saying, you put the other person's needs first above yours. Yeah, that's a very simple explanation. It can be much more fleshed out, but this is what got me started down this path.
Rabbit hole.
Right. Oh. Yeah, this rabbit hole.
Yeah, and GotQuestions.org says, altruism is an unselfish concern for the welfare of others. They would give generously of time and resources for no personal gain and often at personal risk. All right, go ahead.
So often what happens when I have a question like this, I'll just type it into Google. And so I typed in the phrase, is God altruistic or altruism in Christianity? And just kind of looking for some thoughts. And then invariably I got the first article that popped up on the list was from GotQuestions.org, which is a great website where pastors and other Bible teachers across the United States, maybe even the world, get to weigh in on and questions that people send in to them.
And Pastor Sean is part of that.
Right. Our own pastor answers questions on GotQuestions.org. And so that article was pretty good, citing some scripture and other ideas. But really what harkened back into my mind is somewhere along the way, I ran into an article along the same idea from John Piper. And that's the one we're going to read today. It's called Don't Do God's Will Like an Atheist. It comes from when he spoke at Liberty University Convocation and some of the unfolding of that message. So that's where we are today. That's how we got here. This is our Christmas connection because this time of year, even, Scrooges sometimes become a little bit more altruistic. And
if they're visited by the ghost of Christmas.
Right. Christ. People say, well, this is the time to be pleasant, to be merry, to put other people first. We're encouraged to give more to charity and other things. And in fact, Americans do give more this time of year. And so I just wanted to explore this concept of how this fits within the Christian framework, within the biblical framework, this concept of altruism.
All right. This is from 2013. So Pastor Brian. Yeah.
All right. So the question posed to John Piper that then we are going to see his response is, so you don't believe that altruistic acts are possible or desirable? I asked for his definition of altruism so that I could answer what he was really asking. He said, doing a good deed for others with no view to any reward. I answered, that's right. Whether or not it's possible, I don't think it's desirable, because it's not what the Bible teaches us to do, and it's not what people experience as genuine love, because it isn't genuine love. When God is glorified. I had said in the convocation message, doing right for right's sake is atheistic. Christians should do what's right for God's sake, because the Bible teaches us to do everything for the glory of God, 1 Corinthians 10:31. But God is not glorified if we leave him out of account and say that doing a right deed is its own justification. Nothing is its own justification if God is left out. Christians should do what God says is right, because in doing it we enjoy more of God. Jesus was motivating us to be generous to others when he said, "It's more blessed to give than to receive," Acts 20:35. I'm simply saying that this motivating promised blessedness is not mainly more money, but more God. God delights to reveal more of himself to the generous than to the stingy, John 14:23. This motive glorifies God. God is glorified when he is desired as a treasure. If we want a deeper fellowship with him because he makes us happier than anyone else, we glorify him. So to be motivated to do right by the desire for more of God glorifies God.
All right. So I think there's a lot there to really unpack. As we think, especially of American Christianity, but certainly I think it's made its way across the sea, and we see it a big time in some African communities. We see it big time in some Korean communities. The one of the largest growing segments or slices of Christianity would be the prosperity gospel kind of Christianity. And so, Jack, how does that fit into this concept of gaining more God for doing what's right? When the televangelist on the screen says, "Contact this number because you're going to be more blessed."
Well, I don't know about that, John. I'm sorry. I was kind of lost in my thoughts in this whole entire thing, and I just want to really back the train up really, really fast and say there's no such thing as altruism. Piper kind of said, "I don't know if there is or if there isn't, whether or not it's possible." I'm going to go on a limb, and I'm going to make a definitive statement. I'm going to hold to it. People can criticize me for it. I really don't care. There is no such thing as altruism. Nobody operates from a purely unselfish mode of operation. I'm sorry. There's no such thing as pure innocent methods. Everybody operates from mixed methods. Now, here's the thing. Here's where I would say we get the idea of altruism. How about we say it this? Altruism is when you're doing good without thought of motivation. There's still an underlying motivation. You just may not be cognitive of that motivation.
So what Piper's describing as doing good to get more God is not possible from a human's perspective?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Piper's right, because that would be the motivation. The motivation is to have more of God in your
so
life.
So you're saying no one ever does anything just purely
to do it for no reason.
Yeah.
I mean, there's either a selfish motive of I'm going to get something, or I'm going to look better.
Or you may not actually have that motive, because we cannot dismiss how God created us. God created us with a mixture of chemicals flowing through us. And I hate to take a biological standpoint on this, but I'm not going to try to be a behaviorist or a biologist in the essence of everything.
But you feel better if you do good to somebody.
That's what I'm saying.
You get an emotional feel-good
you're cognitive. You may not be cognitively aware,
but it's
that
God.
That's your motivation piece behind it.
Right.
But you're going to have a dopamine release when you see the joy on the person's face to which you did good. So therefore, the chemical high that you receive within your own biological makeup, created by God, is going to become maybe an unconscious motivating factor in while you're doing this. So nobody operates that way. So now the question comes into what Piper is saying is, that is how an atheist would do it. They would either do it with a cognitive for me, or a cognitive for them and I still get joy out of it, Or they may just say, hey, we're doing this because it's the right thing to do, not realizing that their body is signaling them to keep doing that because it felt good to their body.
Well, I think a lot of that would even might buy into the yin-yang thing. Well, yes. You know, well, I'm going to do it because what comes around
goes around. And,
it could, know, so it I'll could, be nice to them because it could be somebody will be nice to me later.
You know, and I'm listening to some leadership books right now, and the guys are SEALs, and they're talking about how these guys went out and selflessly gave of their lives. We see it on the medals and awards. It's always in the last statement. Their selfless acts of service brings great credit upon themselves, their unit in the United States Army or the United States Marine Corps or the United States Navy, Air Force. And we always see that mindset in there, but that's not an altruistic thing. They did it because they love their brothers in arms or their sisters in arms. They do it because they love their nation. They may even be the people like, I wasn't trying to get the Medal of Honor. I wasn't trying to get a Silver Star. I wasn't trying to get a Bronze Star. I wasn't trying to get an Achievement Medal. I was doing it because it's my duty, because I love my nation and I love my unit. But there's still a motivator there.
But it's just their duty.
But it's still something that's motivating them. And that's why I say I don't think there is such a thing as altruism. So in this gospel of prosperity and everything else, they're really corrupting it. I mean, they are. This is what creates the depth of heresy in their preaching. Is they are saying, be an atheist, be motivated for purely selfish gain, and disguise it as God's blessing upon you. I mean, they are literally taking and saying, come here, wolf. I've sewn you this nice chic coat to put on. And see how God has blessed you. See how God has blessed you.
1995.
Yeah, you can even use it for a prayer.
Prayer rug, yeah.
So you're a parent. Everyone around the table is a parent. Steve, how does this concept fit into giving gifts at this time of year to others? How does it fit into the gifts we receive from others? Because that's a big part of how we parent is... And how does it fit in within, now you treat your sister right, because I know you, Steve. I'm sure that when there was a disagreement, you brought them back to the scriptures at some point. And you told them, you gave them a verse to give them some instruction, and what you were really saying is, you do what's right. So how does this motivation, how does that fit into the gift giving and the way that you parent and tell your children? What do you tell them about altruism?
I never did.
can I jump in while you're thinking? I completely agree with Piper that you should be teaching people that we do things for the glory of God. But being the youngest parent in the room, having a three, almost four-year-old, yes, we're talking about worship and what things are, but he doesn't understand that. He's got to start with, you do what's right because it's right and because I said so. And because there's punishment if you don't. And it has to start there while he's cognitively developing. And then as he gets older, then I can transfer, okay, the things you've been doing, the motivation isn't just because it's the right thing to do or just because mom or dad or your teacher said to do it, but it's because when we do that, we're actually worshiping God.
That's a great point because it says the rod of correction will drive it far from him.
Yeah, but... what is wrong with taking it and saying to the three-year-old mind, hey, this is what God says is right, and we're going to do it because it's right. You've reinforced that right isn't tied to an arbitrary standard, and I'm going to go to this definition of right ambiguously given to me, this nebulous right. That's right for our family, but is it right for every family? Is it right in every point of society? Is it right in every demographic? To then later back it up and say, well, the reason why I've been telling you that's because God said it. Why can't we say that all along?
Well, and to be honest, that's how it works.
You get what I'm saying?
Because there's, I guess in my mind, I see it in two different lines. The reason why we tell Michael not to play with electrical outlets is starting out because of his primary safety. not because I have a directive from God's word that says thou shalt not touch electrical sockets. All right, there's a common sense side of it. But then when it gets into, okay, you obey here when it comes to this could kill you, versus you obey here because God expects you to be kind to your brother. God expects you to share.
Because he
all the time is being reminded that, okay, you do things because I say so. And then additionally in the conversation, it's all right, okay, you do things because it makes Jesus sad when you disobey mommy and daddy. It makes God disappointed. All right. The reason why you share is because those toys come from God. He's the one that has provided them.
And what's interesting about that, your example is, you take the toddler messing with electricity and it could kill you, okay?
Or just trip the breaker.
Or whatever. But fast forward into your teen years, and what we're saying is we want you to avoid premarital sex, which won't, let's just be honest, it won't kill you. It'll offer you pleasure. We want you to avoid that because we know that there is a greater good in this scenario, whereas if you're talking about your biological response, you think, well, why are you keeping me? You know, that's students. Why are you keeping me from something that I can enjoy?
That I was biologically created to do.
Right. And so there, now we're at a great logical fallacy. If we've taught them the only reason I tell you to do something is because it will hurt you. And so then we have to define, well, what has hurt you? You know, is 4 or 5 hookups in your teenage years going to destroy your marriage later on? You know, and so now we have these. So, Jack, your point is well taken, and yours too, Brian. There's a pragmatic part of parenting.
Oh, that, absolutely.
No question.
And I'm not trying to lessen that. I'm just trying to say early on as we possibly can, connect God to that pragmatic.
Absolutely.
And I guess
God's law.
I mean, really, with my girls, I took the approach because I felt from Scripture that, God punishes us when we disobey. Bottom line.
Correct.
There's no other means of punishment or correction except for disobedience. So with my girls, I always went back to that if they were going to be punished, it was because they disobeyed.
Yes.
And if it was something they did initially out of ignorance that I hadn't told them, I didn't punish them. Mm-hmm. At that point, I took it as a teaching time to, all right, this is why we don't play with the outlet. All right, and I explained the
danger. Your hair standing on end?
Yeah. You explain the danger of it, the hazard of it, and then at that point you say, now, from this point forward, don't play with the outlet anymore. And then if they do, then it comes back to, okay, now you've disobeyed. Now you've broken the trust that we have, and when I disobey God, God punishes me. And I'm in the place of God in your life. And since you broke that trust, since you broke the law, the rule, now you have to be punished. Because one day when you're no longer in my house, one day, God's going to punish you for what you do. And I'm going to try, I'm trying to train you to follow the rules, to follow the commands, to do what's right so that you get less punishment down the road. But as far as the gift giving, I mean, our goal... I always taught from, that it's more blessed to give than to receive, and that God expects us to give and to enjoy the giving of a gift more than the receiving of one.
But why?
Because he commands it. Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive.
And he also said what? He said it's freely you've been given.
Right.
Right? So freely you should
so
give.
It's tied to the gospel, whereas I was forgiven everything, not deserving any forgiveness at all.
So I forgive people.
Right.
Well, I've been blessed with monetary wealth. Therefore, freely I've been given money.
Well, he even says you're not blessed with
monetary
wealth.
So then I should be gracious with monetary wealth. If I've been given objects, then I should be gracious in sharing my objects, the sharing. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? There's always a God reason behind it. And we've got to get those connectivity points early on, because if we wait till we think that they're able to cognitively process it, we may have already began the pragmatic atheism in their life, even though they may still be believers.
But so what is the way that we did it?
Pragmatism.
Kind of finish that thought. You know, every year we would try to find a family that was less fortunate than we were. You know, and we would take the girls shopping and say, you know, hey, these are the children they have. You know, what would you want if you were that age? What would you want? You know, what kind of gifts? And then they would pick gifts out. We would buy them. We'd wrap them. You know, we'd go put them on their, you know, somebody's doorstep. You know, we'd get their address and go find, ring the doorbell and, you know, go hide in the street or in the bushes and, you know, have them open the door and, you know, find the presents on the front porch. You know, and that was just something, you know, we did to help the girls understand the joy of giving. And as Jack said, you know, that you're blessing someone else that's less fortunate, and to realize that that's what God has done for us.
So, Jack, what are some pitfalls that maybe you've experienced or you've seen or you can imagine in the gift giving during Christmas time for children, the whole way that we do it? In America, especially tied to the...
Well, you never like the pajamas and the underclothes you get from the grandparents. Oh, man.
We've gone over the top. I think that's the biggest pitfall is the over-the-topism.
Are you talking about from a secular standpoint or Christian?
No, as Christians.
Okay.
In light of what we're talking about.
But even in Christians, is what we do is we get to the point of... And this is not just tied to this gift-giving season. This gift-giving season is...
A manifestation.
Is a manifestation of a deeper hole.
What's the ingratitude of people?
Well, not so much that. I'm talking about even as a parent. Let me, you know, take as a parent what perspective. Man, I remember the first Christmas we had Brianna. Man, we had Brianna, man, and it was like, here's this beautiful gift from God. Here's this little girl. We're going to buy her absolutely everything under the sun that we can possibly afford. And, man, we're going to push that budget. And, man, it was so many gifts under the tree that she played with the paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the boxes. And, you know, for years... You know, it was like that, and even to this day, we still try to do as much as we can, everything else. And the temptation is always there to do more, to show them how much we love them by doing more, And I would say that's indicative. The gift-giving sensation is indicative because we're doing it out of love, and we do love our children. But we're letting our love go beyond the boundary that our love should go, because our love should show them that you don't always get what you want. You don't always have to have more. Our love may be inadvertently breeding the greed that we are trying to teach against when we're saying, hey, we're going to give to unfortunate people, things of that nature. And we continue to do this practice of it, and we tend to go overboard, and we tend to feed wants rather than needs. And not that we shouldn't occasionally get something we want, but that's it. It should be the occasional I got something I want. It should be the expectation that I'm going to get almost all that I want, or that I'm going to get a great portion of what I want. Because then I'm going to be tempted to go into the ingratitude of I didn't get all that I want, right. You know, that type of aspect. But I think that goes even to the point of how we live our lives daily with our children. Is we have come to a point out of love, probably wrongfully carried out, that we tried to shield them from any disappointments, any lessening of expectation. Any pain, and the truth is, pain is good for us. Pain is good for us. Pain teaches me not to do that, or pain comes because I'm pushing myself towards excellence in physicality, different things. So sometimes I need pain. Pain motivates me. Pain grows me. Pain happens. Christ let his disciples suffer through failure. Why can't we cast this demon out? Well, you haven't fasted. You need to put your body in subjection. You need to suffer pain of hunger So you learn reliance on God to have the spiritual power to do the mission that He's given you to do, which is to cast out demons. You 12 guys that walk with me. So we've got to this point where Christmas is simply like the check engine light on our dashboard of something deeper. And that deeper is that we have overemphasized love and everything else to the point that boundaries don't exist, and we're disguising it as it's love, it's what God's commanding me to do, and everything else. But the truth of the matter is that you are really feeling good about yourself. Mm-hmm. And the truth is if we were really doing it for God's glory, we would be saying, "Let this gift is because God, this gift, or these two or three gifts, are because God has blessed us to be able to provide these things. These things that you need and this thing that you want, and that's great. And not only that, but He's also able to bless us so that we can also go and be a blessing to others, and they learn that there's a limit in my wants, because if I limit my wants and my expectations, then it gives me freedom. If I discipline that, then I have the freedom to operate over here for God's glory to those who God designed and ordained to be less fortunate.
I think, you know, from a parenting perspective too, I have 6 children.
And I failed at that as a parent. I just want to put that on record.
I have 6 children, so I have a greater potential to see different personalities and different natural bents. And I think that especially my wife's, one of her big frustrations when it comes to this time of year is that, you know, and you guys have each had 2. Yours aren't old enough yet, Brian. But so I don't know how different each, I don't know if you had one of one type and one of the other, if they're kind of both the same. But in my house, there were some kids that would work and save money. They were thinking about, how am I going to get a present with $20 for all of the family? And they were just frazzled and then I had the one kid who didn't even think of it at all, you know, show up on Christmas Day, take my haul, and, you know, and that was the one that, you know, drove my wife crazy. Why aren't they thinking about it? What's wrong with them? So even with children like that, because I could see kind of a wide variety, that you have to, you know, be on top of some, you know, okay, we're going to go shopping for mom. Come on. Oh, do I have to, kind of thing, you know, and then just real stingy. And then I've got another kid that, I mean, he would just, you know, if he didn't, you know,
he said
it's half of them. he is a gift giver. He loves people by giving them gifts. And, you know, if he's not careful, he just blow all his money on giving gifts. And so, you know, this issue is very complicated, because there's many things that go into why we do this. And you know, that's one reason I was thinking about it as I was sitting there. I was at a school Christmas party, not this school, but and the guy said, well, you know, this is just a season about family and about loving others through giving them. And Jack, my mind ran to exactly what you were saying, is it always love to give? And we see, of course, the ultimate example. We say things like, well, God gave His only Son. And then my mind runs to, well, yeah, but if He knew He was going to die but then be resurrected, how is that the same as me offering, you know, because we hear the story with the guy with the train tracks and his kid was down there and he had to switch the tracks. And if he didn't switch the tracks at the right time, then everybody on the train was going to go over the precipice and die. But his son was down there and he had to decide, I'm just going to sacrifice my son for all 30 people on the train. I mean, we've heard stories like that and trying to, you know, capture what the gospel is like. And then, you know, trying to tell your children, you know, we give because Christ gave, you know, is that the right way to motivate them? And these are the things that, you know, I was wrestling with when we got to this article. So you want to move on to the next part?
How Jesus motivates. Jesus said that when we are slandered as Christians, we should rejoice, Matthew 5:12, and love our enemies, Matthew 5:44. For great is your reward in heaven, Matthew 5:12. And so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, Matthew 5:45. The motivation he appeals to is that the path of sacrificial love leads to an increase of joy in our relationship to God as Father. Jesus motivated us to invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind to our feast because they cannot repay us. Then he added, "For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just," Luke 14. In other words, be generous, make sacrifices in this world, because great is your reward in heaven. This reward, of course, includes everything in God's inheritance, for you will be an heir of the world, Romans 4:13. All things are yours, 1 Corinthians 3:21. The meek shall inherit the earth, Matthew 5:5. Yes, the reward includes earthly things, but in that day there will be no danger of idolatry. The earth and the heavens and all things will declare the glory of God, and the essence of our joy in them will be joy in Him. What makes our reward truly great is the greater fullness of our fellowship with God. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore, Psalm 16:11. This fullness and this forever are behind the motivation of the early Christians when they did what was right and suffered for it. They visited fellow Christians in prison because they saw this reward. You had compassion on those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the plundering of your property, since you knew that you yourselves had a better possession and an abiding one. Hebrews 10:34. They rejoiced in persecution because their reward was great in heaven. That's why they got the courage to risk their lives. It had great reward. Hebrews 10:35. So I answer again, doing a good deed for others with no view to any reward is unbiblical and atheistic. It dishonors God. He offers more joy in His fellowship to those who do right for His sake than for right's sake. If we don't embrace the offer of this reward in doing good, we belittle Him. But if we do embrace the offer, we show Him as our supremely desired treasure above all the reward of doing right, or of doing, above all the rewards of doing wrong. You know, and that I'm just kind of thinking of doing right for right's sake. I can't help at Christmas time, because we were kind of talking about it in youth last night, with Santa Claus and Rudolph, that the song "Santa Claus is Coming to Town" has the line, "You better be good for goodness sake," because that's our culture's motivator, is, well, your right behavior will bring reward based upon, you know, your actions, which is very much, I'll say, a works-based salvation concept, that whatever you do, that it's karma, that it's the yin and the yang, it's the... A skewing of the biblical, you reap what you sow. But it's very interesting to see that is very atheistic. To use motivators of your right behavior brings right things is the complete opposite of what Christ would be teaching.
So how do we get, during this season, how do we capture the moment with our children when we're on Christmas morning? Because I know in our house what we do, and I always feel like it's a little bit... just like an exercise, we read the Christmas story. And so my thought, you know, a few paragraphs back when I was thinking about it is, you know, what if I talked about the gospel story? And by the way, last year I found a great resource, not to just pump John Piper all the time, but he has these things. He has this thing leading up to Christmas. They're like podcasts. We actually listen to them. Man, I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the house when we were done. I mean, he's just a well-spoken person. The reason I like John Piper is he does the things that are in my mind. He says them out loud way better than I could ever do it. So I would recommend that resource to you. He's got, well, you could just listen to him every day.
And you got to cut up onions while you're listening to him.
Right, yeah. But, no, we were drinking hot chocolate.
It must have been the sugar-free really hot.
But how do we do this as dads?
The allergens.
What kind of activities or focus could we bring around that time when we're getting ready to open the presents, or maybe Christmas Eve? How can we talk about or instruct about this idea of the fullness of God?
You guys have more experience at it than I do.
I mean, certainly one of the thoughts that have come to
experience doesn't equate success.
Yeah, and I'm with Jack because...
let's be honest on that one. Let's be completely transparent. Like I said earlier, I would love to say all that I rattled off earlier, it lived out year after year after year. Unfortunately, what I'm talking about is lessons learned or lessons I've become aware of by seeing end results of less successful attempts. If that's you know, the wisdom of the older man, I guess.
So at this point,
I'm not really gonna say old man, older man.
I think at this point, the three of us, Steve, Jack, and myself, we're talking about now maybe being able to speak into our children's lives with their children.
Yeah, looking at the grandchildren, the coming grandchildren.
And certainly I have some, and you guys have some that are going to be potentially coming down the way. But
yours got to get married first.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They have to get engaged and married first.
Yeah.
And it happens.
But that's happening. That's
it does happen. But, you know, what are some just practical strategies? Could we brainstorm for just a minute to see some practical strategies to push this thing towards not just angels filling the sky with song, which is correct and great, but this whole concept of the gospel and giving and enjoying the more of the fullness of God in our life as we we look forward to moving into a new year. We talk about what happened last year and how we're going to do things better. I mean, what kind of things can we do for our children? The one thing that comes to my mind is, you know, ashamedly, I agree with you, Jack. I look back on my life. Man, I wish I would have done that. I wish I would have done that. But, you know, you see people go into a soup kitchen or go into a place like that to serve people on Christmas. That's something I've never really embraced.
Yeah, I would say I would still struggle with that because I just don't feel a overwhelming, compelling push that direction. But we've always made a definitive inclusion, like you did, Steve, in finding people to help out, finding people to give to. You know, in the years we did the singles ministry, the opening of our home because they couldn't go home over Christmas, making them consciously aware of why we're doing that. You've been blessed. You're at this time in this stage of your life to still be with us, to be in our home. Here are people who have left their home. They're serving for a greater cause. They're out there by themselves. They've now become adults. One day you'll be an adult. So we want to take what we graciously have the ability to do and do it for them, to open the doors for them, for a few reasons. One, it is right for us to do that because God wants us to be hospitable. Two, they are, if they're believers, a member of our family. And beyond that, it's just the kind of people that we want you to be in life. We want, and we selfishly want you to be seen as good people who treat people this way. So we walk the whole gamut of it. That's why I said early on, is the pragmatics are there. I think what problem is we don't make enough intentionality of connecting God to the pragmatics. Instead of just giving the gifts, who provided the gifts? This is why, you know, last week.
So when you get the underwear, you say, God provided you with a covering, so I'm providing you. I'm being an example of that.
Yeah. So for it came out of the stockings. Yeah. Always.
Stockings, that was my main present growing up. What are you talking about?
So we had, but, you know, Pastor asked last week, and, you know, Pastor's not with us because Austin's graduating from basic, right?
Yes.
The piece of this is that he asked last week, he said to us, you know, what did you do? You know, and for Rudolph and
right.
The videos and everything else, and he talked about what he did and everything else. I didn't get a chance to say anything in that, and then I got asked about that this week, and John, I think it kind of goes into what we're asking here, is we didn't do Santa. Now, we still watched the Christmas movies. We still had Santa as a fun element of Christmas, an entertainment piece. But we didn't do the gifts from Santa. We didn't do the things of that nature. They definitively knew that those were provided by mom and dad and that God gave us the ability to provide that. And we tried to make that connection point. The other piece of that was is in the idea of these are special gifts from mom and dad. was this concept, and we were very honest with him right off the bat. And they would ask, why don't we do Santa? And we'd tell them, because we're not going to ever have you doubt our integrity. We never want you to have a room in your mind for Satan to come along and say, if your parents lied about Satan, are you sure they're not lying about, I'm sorry, Santa? Are you sure?
Trying to save letters. Just mix them around a little bit.
Are you sure they're not lying about Jesus? That was not an intended thing. Listener, please forgive me. I'm not trying to say that Santa's Satan. That was a slip of some type.
He does know what if you're bad or good and when you're sleeping.
Yeah, we won't even go into that one. That's a whole another issue of a hashtag Me Too kind of thing. So the process of this is that I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I don't want them to ever think that if I doubt my integrity about Christ.
So you didn't do Easter Bunny either, huh?
No, but we decorated eggs.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? We enjoyed the fun elements of it, but we always made the intentionality to keep God tied into that.
Right.
So that they understood that. And I think, Jonathan, that's the thing that we really, really have to do is however you choose to do that. But I think that, okay, this isn't a Christmas thing. The thing that I wish I had learned years ago, and I don't know why I never made the connection. I mean, here we were, military leaders and things of that nature, you know, and you were leading here in the church, and, you know, young man, you know, been leading for years now and things of that nature. Brian, you're there now. You're at that point where we were, you know, 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And you're at this aspect of this is that where there is no vision, they cast off restraints. Where there's no vision, they perish. Where there's no vision. And the thing that I never really connected in is I would create plans and strategic plans and event planning and coordinations and things of that nature for my military units. You would do it for church events. You would do it for church events. You're doing it for church events. We all are for church events now. And we would do these things, but we don't do them for our kids.
Yeah, it's incredible. That's a great point, because it's incredible how I'm not broad brushing Steve or Jack or Brian saying you don't do this. I'll just put it on me. I wasn't as thoughtful about these events as possible. There's so much that I could have, connected to the gospel and other things that we were learning throughout the year at these times, but it's just, we're so thoughtful, like you say, about work.
Mm-hmm.
We're so planning about work, but are we as thoughtful about having a schedule of learning things for our family? As fathers, you know, as when I thought about family devotions, I don't know why, but it just never really occurred to me till really much later into my time as a parent to have something that was strategic and uniform and regular, as far as, you know, something as simple as we're going to go through a catechism, or something that's linear and something that's connected and well thought out. Those things were kind of like just, oh, it's time for devotions. Let me pull out my Bible and see what I can come up with.
Yeah, and it feels forced and awkward.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And let's take the pragmatics. This is why maybe we never felt, we never felt so connected and smooth normative in the aspect of doing something at Christmas time felt almost like, oh, well, it's Christmas time, we have to do this, it's expected of us kind of thing, is because we didn't strategically have service opportunity that says, 365, I'm blessed by God. So once a month, me and my kids go do something. Once a month, my kids at a young age get to travel with me, and once a month, we're cleaning out our closet. Or every season, as it changes, we're cleaning out the older clothes and everything else, and they're coming with me. And why are we going to Goodwill? Because God has blessed us so abundantly that we no longer need these clothes, so we're going to give them to an outlet that can distribute them better than we could. You know what I'm saying? And we're constantly making these strategic, planned events so Christmas doesn't feel so forced, awkward, out of the ordinary. It's just another normative part of our life because of how much we've been blessed by God. And I think that's what causes us to have these kind of these dichotomies of awkwardness.
Right, Jackie, I think we need to take that one step further. But aside, because I agree with you, because I'm sitting here thinking about, I'm like, okay, so if all you do is focus on that, this concept at Christmas and at Easter, what are you doing, you know, for the other 10 months of the year?
Exactly.
A month for Christmas and a month for Easter.
And a birthday in there.
And so, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking about, like, why don't we do this with athletics? Why don't we do this with academics, with fine arts, with church attendance? With, okay, the reason why you're participating in athletics is not because, you know, you just find it fun. It's to glorify God with the body and the talent that He has given you. With academics, same thing. Fine arts and all these other things. And if, you know, I think it would line up well with what Piper is saying is if everything we did, 1 Corinthians 10:31, was focused on being done not for selfish motivators because I want to be the captain of the team or I want to be the salutatorian or the valedictorian or because I want the scholarship to college or because I want to be asked to play or sing a special in church.
It's
because it honors God. Because too often, and I deal with it all the time, why are you not in church? Because you're going to play sports. Well, why are you going to play sports? Because it's fun. And if it's not for the right motivation of glorifying and building your relationship with God, then sports takes the precedent over church. Academics takes the precedent over church. Fine arts practice takes precedent over the relationship with God because it is inconsistent.
Yeah. Too often we're unintentionally creating compartmentalism mindsets. What was
your say, brother? Well, I was to say, I just read an article this morning. I was reading in about prayer, and it's, you know, and the author's point was, you know, we often say, you know, hey, pray for Aunt Sally's leg to heal, but you know, and his thought was, you know, he said the follow up should be, how will that honor God if it is healed? You know, how what will she do with a healed leg that will then bring glory to God? You know, and again, that was his focus was, you know, we ask for prayer, you know, so-and-so has cancer, pray God heals, and this person has this, heal. But he was like, you know, we never say, you know, why should God heal them? You know, what are they going, you know, how are they going to respond? What are they going to do to bring glory and honor to Him as a result of the healing?
That's fantastic because if you're honest, if we're all honest, a true believer experiences more of the fullness of God in those really difficult moments.
Oh, yeah.
When we're suffering and we can't see, this is horrible, I do not like this experience. Those are the times we cry out to God. Those are the times we contemplate God. Those are the times we think about the fullness of God. When everything's A-okay and I got everything that I want, I'm filled up with so much of other stuff that I don't have the fullness of God. And I think that we do such a terrible job, especially in services that where collectively we gather as the body of Christ. We do, every song has to be uplifting and encouraging, like the radio station slogan. You know, I can't come to church this morning and be driven over by the cement roller of God's conviction. That is not in my plan.
Did any of you watch John? Is it John Christ?
Yeah.
Comedian. He just came out with a new thing about the what do you call it when you put the goggles over your eyes?
The virtual reality.
Yeah, the virtual church. And that was, he was like, you know, now you can choose how much conviction do I want on a scale of 0 to 10, and you know, how uplifting do I want my songs to be, and you know, what kind of pastor do I want, and how skinny do I want my worship director's jeans to be? You know,
you put those on me.
You know, and you go through and you just choose every, you know, anyway.
But, how about the spiritual symbol tattooed on your forearm? Yeah, and you go there.
But, you know, this concept of the fullness of God is something that I really think would do dads, especially moms and dads, Think about that in relationship to your gift giving, whatever you do on Christmas Eve or Christmas morning about the Christmas story. Finish the Christmas story. Tell about the sacrifice Christ made. Tell about the coming resurrection and hope that we have in Him to enjoy His fullness throughout all eternity.
Yeah, and I would say, John, adding to that, if it's awkward this year and you're doing it because, hey, it's that season and you've started down that path, by all means, good, do that. But then think of a way to strategically plan it, to carry it out throughout the rest of 2019 so that at Christmas 2019 it feels normative.
All right. Listener, what are your thoughts? What are your comments? If you have any, post them right after the article there on Sermon Audio, and let us hear from you, and we trust that you have a blessed and Merry Christmas and a soon-to-be Happy New Year. Thanks for listening.